you know, leaning on that and reminding ourselves of that. And actually, it's kind of interesting because during this time period, it was like right around this time last year when we were going through the legislative session and passing this bill. And so coming upon, you know, Easter and Passover, and I just found myself like really relying on the Passover story to get myself through this. When you asked, how did you keep your will to keep moving forward going? And I just kept sort of repeating myself that, you know, over and over, that rebellion to tyrants is service to God. And we're doing this for the right reasons. And we just have to remember that this is for all the students of Montana. They're who matter, and it's for them. And keeping that in mind just gave us, you know, the motivation to just keep smiling and keep showing up and to never give up.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Well, thanks for joining us for another episode of American Potential. Thanks for being with us. You know, each morning, children across the country wake up and they get ready to start their day. For some, they eagerly anticipate going to school, while others dread it. I was always the kid that dreaded it. The traditional school system is geared towards the needs of most students, which means some students' needs just simply aren't being met. And that can lead to struggles, to frustration, and it can lead to boredom. As the class moves through the curriculum, students that don't have an understanding of the material, they're being left behind, hindering their ability to grasp concepts. And this is why having several different learning options is needed, so that students can find the individual learning environment that goes with their learning style. Again, kids should not be restricted by their zip code. Now, one state only had three schooling options until recently. And our guest today lives in Montana, where she championed a charter school bill to expand educational options for the students in her state. She grew a coalition and became a resource for those who had questions. Because of their efforts, not only did the charter school bill get passed, but another educational bill got passed as well. I want to welcome Trish Schreiber, who is the Senior Education Fellow for the Frontier Institute. Trish, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for having me.
Yeah, so first of all, great. I love the state of Montana, one of my favorite places. I haven't been up there for maybe 4 or 5 months, but tell folks, what part of Montana are you in?
So I'm in southwestern Montana. So I'm about 45 minutes north of Helena, which is our capital.
All right. Yes, gotcha. Okay, well, great. So let's talk a little bit about your background in education, how it became a focus in your life. Why is education important?
Well, I feel like I have really two stories, or as I say, I have a book about education in my life. And so there are a few chapters that really are highlighted. And one is my personal education story, which initially prompted me into becoming an educator. And then I have a professional education story as well. So as you mentioned in the introduction, my personal education story is very much related to my zip code. And I grew up in East San Jose in California, where I had a single mother who with two older sisters. And my mom had to work a number of jobs to kind of keep things going for us. And so one of the things we had to do a lot was move. And my older sisters, one is 7 years older than me. And so my mother learned during her early education that moving around is not a great idea. So because the curriculum in schools changes, and there's no state curriculum in California that dictates that everyone has to learn A, B, or C, you know, during whatever school year. So my sister, her early learning was really disrupted. And so by the time my mom had me, she figured that the best thing to do is to lie about where we live, because then we could stay in the same school. So again, we moved all around the East San Jose school district, but you know, I was just like living at my best friend's house, according to the school, and no one ever really checked. And that made a big right. difference for me. So there was that. And then when I entered middle school, we moved to the west side of San Jose, which was at the time really developing into the Silicon Valley. And so that was a game changer. And I did eighth grade at an excellent middle school that was completely different from the school I had been to before. And it was the exact same district. It's just that it was 17 miles west. And this time my mom's like, I'm changing our address because I know these schools are supposed to be good. And in fact, they were. And it just changed everything for me. All of a sudden, I identified as being, you know, a person who would probably go to college. And that was just simply a change of my peers and the teachers' expectations and the expectations of the parents of my peers. So when I got into college, I was really behind in math all through high school. I just had to get through. It was really tough. And that was really because my basic skills were not set well. And, for math, that is. And so when I started college, it was literally like a week after my high school graduation, I signed up at the community college and just decided I needed to retake algebra. I just knew I didn't know it. And that's why I struggled with math all through high school. And so there you go. So I retook algebra. And then just being mature or just being a different stage in my life, all of a sudden it made sense where it had never made sense before. And I said, why didn't someone just say it this way before? But I don't think it was that my teachers were bad. I think it was just that my brain wasn't ready. But because we're on a conveyor belt, when we go through public education, you just go from year to year, regardless of whether or not you're mastering skills. So at that point, I decided I wanted to be a teacher. It became important to me to try to catch people earlier in their lives to help them so that they can have really solid basic skills and get the most out of their education, whatever that is.
Yeah. So, you know, you really, that story really speaks to the fact that you use the phrase conveyor belt, and that truly is kind of what we've done with K through 12 education in America, right? You're in this zip code, you're on this conveyor belt, and it doesn't matter what kind of kid you are, but that's really what's so important to understand is all kids are different. Any parent who has two kids or more understands that. They're just not the same. And that's really the value of this kind of free market reform that we see in education. I mean, do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And when I decided to go into teaching, I knew right away I didn't want to become a typical classroom teacher who was going to just become part of what I saw at that point as, you know, part of the system that's part of the problem. I wanted to find a way to reach out to students more individually in order to help them. So I studied special education, and that led me into a career of being a learning specialist where I worked in private practice for families. And that allowed me to do assessment and instruction and remediation and consulting for families to help them find the best placement for their kids. So, and I worked with all age groups, really from, you know, usually starting around first or second grade, because that's usually when people start to get an idea that their kid might need something different. Things aren't clicking when they're learning early reading or early math. And then people would come to me and we'd figure it out from there and help them move forward.
So why did you decide really to then work on getting a charter school bill passed in Montana?
So after being in private practice for a little over 20 years, my husband and I decided to move to Montana, and it was sort of on a whim. We just were, you know, like, let's open up another chapter of our lives and do something different. And we were planning on coming here and, you know, like, hiking and camping and hunting and packing mules and having like a Montana life. And we started that. But then when COVID hit, we were really lucky that we were here already and were already established, because Montana was not bad when it came to lockdowns. I mean, there was some of that. And of course, the first 2 weeks were tough and everyone was a little bit crazy. But we had already sorted our life so that we weren't going into town very frequently. And you know, we were just sort of loving our lives being out in this rural area, which is lovely. So anyhow, but as you know, things got really political in lots of ways during that time period. And it was, so it was like in 2020, 2021, when I just started realizing that I wanted to, because I gave up my practice when we moved to Montana, but I wanted to still be connected to the community and I wanted to be connected to the community here in Montana. So I started volunteering in schools since, you know, I can teach and I can teach teachers how to teach. And it just made sense. And as I started doing that, I started reading more about Montana education and I realized that there just are no choices. I mean, I was shocked to find out that Montana did not have a charter school law. I honestly didn't even know in 2020 that you needed to have a law to have charter schools. I just thought they were part of the system being in California. I mean, I never thought about them as being competitive to the public schools. Rather, I saw them as being an additional option to public schools. It just gave parents one more choice. So I just started looking into that and became kind of obsessed with how ridiculous it was that Montana did not have charter schools and found out that it was because there was a very strong political movement that was really keeping it from happening in the state. And that movement really was from the teachers union and the education establishment who just didn't want anything to change. Simultaneously, over the last 15 to 20 years in Montana, their student achievement scores have been going down. They're on a downward trajectory. And while they're in the middle of, you know, like the country as far as like they're not the worst and they're not the best, they're like grouped in with about another 18 states. There's no reason for no change to happen for that long of a period of time, especially if you can do something to disrupt that and to give parents more options and therefore students more opportunities to thrive.
Yeah. Isn't it incredible how, and you hear this all the time, well, you know, defenders of the system will say something like, well, you know, we're in the middle of the pack or we're, you know, doing better than this state or that state or whatever. And you look and it's still, you know, 20% or 40% or whatever of the kids in that particular grade that you're measuring are proficient in math or proficient in English or whatever. And it's like, we're failing half the kids. So even if you're doing better than other people, that's not good. But it takes people who look at it differently. And I think that's what you tried to do here, right? Is look at it differently, break the system that's there a little bit, break out of the mold and try something different, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And again, as a learning specialist, I spent my career teaching people who were literally labeled as disabled, like unable to learn how to read. I taught them how to all be illiterate and they could all read and write. Knowing, I mean, when people came to me, they knew that they would leave having those skills. And at all levels, it wasn't just like getting them to grade level. It's like, no, if you work with me, we're going to go beyond that. We're going to find the best example of you, whatever that is, and help you, you know, reach your true potential. And that sort of brings me back to Montana is that we literally have in our constitution here, which I'm sure most states do, but the wording in our constitution is that it is the duty of the state to provide, you know, an equal education opportunity for each student to reach their full potential. And that we're not even getting close to that. I mean, not even close. Like our scores are, like you were saying, that 50%. It's like 47% of students, third through eighth grade, are proficient in reading. And it's only like 36% for math. It's pathetic. And so I'm like, there's no way that the children in Montana are less smart or don't have as much potential as any other students in the country. Sure. We're Americans. Yeah. Like, of course they can learn this. It's just a matter of they're not, whether it's that they're not engaged or the schools aren't set up in a way to give them a curriculum that is going to make sure that students are learning better. And I don't know what it is. It's a different story for everyone probably, but I know it was unacceptable.
Yeah. Well, and you talked about how it said that every kid should be reach, you know, is Montana's responsibility that every kid reach their full potential. And but it didn't say within the current system. It said we've got to have them reach their full potential. So you got to think outside the box.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing it doesn't say is it doesn't, even though it talks about, you know, oh, the local school boards have, you know, control in their districts and the Board of Public Education has general supervision of all of the schools. What it doesn't say is that the government has to be the only operator of public schools.
Right.
And that was really where I became obsessed. I was like, look, it doesn't say here that only the government can operate public schools. So while, you know, again, you did mention that we also passed an ESA, which is fantastic. And it's specifically for students with special needs. So you have to be in special education to access it. But it, you know, so there's that too. But also the idea that public schools can be improved. And it usually comes from the leadership, which is both whoever's running that school and the board behind it. And as you know, because Montana, like every other state, has these school board elections where the school boards aren't necessarily united. They're not necessarily working towards the same thing. And they're usually just focused on budgets rather than on what's actually going on in the school and what the students are or aren't learning. So a charter school board allows an independent board to come in, offer a public option so that anyone can afford it because there's no tuition, just like the other public schools. And the other thing is that they're free and open to all students. So crossing district boundaries is absolutely fine.
Yeah. Well, and look, you talked about only being government schools. I mean, this is where we failed in education. We fail anytime we try and make things just be the government. I mean, imagine if it was only government that owned the grocery stores. It was one government owned grocery store. I mean, that's the Soviet Union, by the way, or, you know, Russia, you know, today. So, you know, we're never going to break out of the system. We're never going to have a good system unless we have competition. And that's true for grocery stores, but it's also true for schools and for school systems, right? Let me ask you this. Talk about how you formed the Community Choice Schools Montana group. And how did you find people to join that group?
So that wasn't easy. It really started with just a very small group of us, and we were spread out all over Western Montana. So we weren't even in the same area, and none of us were in Helena. So that wasn't very easy either. And initially, I found these people through other people that we knew who had introduced us because what we all had in common was we wanted to do something about Montana education. And initially, we thought that we were going to open up a private school and just offer it tuition free. We figured we'd just become fundraisers for life. Just find a way to make it happen. We're like, well, if we can't have charter schools, then we'll just open up a private school and give it away, you know? So we were talking about opening up a classical education, K-8 or maybe K-12 school. And then those discussions, as we started reaching out to national partners, for example, we reached out to Hillsdale College, which has a classical education. They call it an American classical education curriculum that is free to anybody who wants to use it. So we reached out to them to kind of talk about that curriculum and then found out that they do memberships for certain schools and they'll sponsor the school and help you get a really great leader in there and train a leader and give you the curriculum and kind of help a school get up and running. So we thought about going in that direction and they came out and they interviewed us to see if we would be maybe potentially a good member school. And they talked us in to running legislation. They were like, look, you can do this private school and it would be great. But how many kids are you really going to be helping if you do this school, even if they're not paying tuition? They're like, but if you change the law and you open up a pathway for charter schools in Montana, then it's exponential, the number of children. Think of all the different kinds of schools that will come to the fore that will address different, you know, learner needs and desires and stuff. So anyway, so then that group of five turned into a group of three because two of them were like, forget it. We're not doing that.
It's too hard. Too hard to do. Yeah.
Right. And so the three of us were like, okay, well, how do we do it? Well, we'll have biweekly meetings. So we literally just scheduled biweekly meetings and we all showed up on Zoom at 4 o'clock every other Tuesday. And from there, we just kept, you know, giving each other ideas about what we needed to learn, who we might need to reach out to, who knows who in another county. And by the time we got to the legislative session, we had been doing these meetings for a little bit over a year. And in that process, we pulled the bill out of legislative services. We talked to experts throughout the country about how to improve it. We engaged with lawyers. We talked to legislators. I mean, these are all things I had never done before.
Right.
And actually, AFP was incredibly helpful. One of the people I met along the way was Henry Kriegel here in Montana, sure. who's amazing.
Yes.
And he was like, Trish, you guys really have this going, but you need a little training. So he, you know, invited me to join the GLA series, and I did a training there. And just again, that then introduced us to more national partners, and we, you know, learned from other people that, hey, you guys are three people in Montana, you can still make this happen. And eventually that grew as parents joined us, teachers joined us, community leaders, retirees joined us. And by the time the session came around, we had a pretty good sized group of people. You know, I would say that we had collected maybe about 550 people at that point, which wow. is small compared to the teachers union. But in Montana, that's sure. a big number. We only have 1 million people who live in the state.
Right.
And we were spread out all over the place. So all of yeah. them then reached out to their legislators. So yeah. it was pretty awesome.
Well, that is incredible. And by the way, I believe I hired Henry Kriegel at AFP. Maybe
good
not.
Job. Well done.
I was around when Henry got hired. Let's put it that way. Henry's great. So, but, you know, I look at that and I want to delve into this a little bit. So there were five of you, then it shrunk to three and, uh-huh. and you decided, well, we're just going to push forward with this and keep going. And I guess, you know, what was in your mind then? You're taking on a task you'd never done before, right? You weren't lobbyists. You weren't, you know, you weren't skilled at this. You didn't have some big lobbyist that you'd hired to do this. Well, that's pretty daunting. I mean, how did you, the three of you, look at that and say, how are we going to figure this out? How did you have the will to carry on?
Right. You know, we didn't think about it too much. We had a way of like ruffling our feathers so that we looked a lot bigger than we actually were when we would go into meetings. And we got the right support too. Another, you know, one of our first national partners was working with the National Alliance of Public Charter Schools. And they came in and they interviewed us midway through this process. And they were like, oh, you guys are awesome. You have this going on. Like, we're here to support you. Let us know what we can do. And we're like, we need to talk to your lawyers so we can figure out how to fix this constitutional issue with charter schools. Because there had been efforts to pass a charter bill extending 24 years in Montana. And that was one of the ways we learned, was that we went through all the archives and read every single bill that had been put before Congress here in Montana. And we watched all the videos. And so in doing that, watching the proponents and the opponents, we just sat there taking notes. And so, again, by the time we got to the session, we knew every single argument that was going to come our way. We had addressed a lot of them in the new draft of the bill so that they couldn't even make that argument, because some of their arguments were really good and legitimate against it. And so we were like, yeah, you know what? They're right. Let's change that. And so we just changed it in the draft. And we worked with a wonderful legislator who really, truly believes that this is great for our state. And so she was terrific and she was a force. And she actually carried the ESA bill as well. And an increase for our tax credit scholarship, which we have here in Montana. So that helped too. It was, again, it was finding, like, just convincing the right people that we were doing the right thing at the right time.
Right.
And we got it.
Well, and then let me ask, this was the follow-on question to that. I mean, we're at five, then you went to three, and then you ended up at 500 or so people who right. were engaged in working to get this bill passed. But that's quite a feat. I mean, you said, oh, that's not a lot. 500 is not a lot. That's actually a lot. I mean, think of putting 500 yeah. people in a room. That's pretty hard to do True. For most people. But you got them not just in a room, you got them engaged and out there working to pass a bill in a state in the United States of America. That's pretty special.
It's pretty awesome. And we weren't sure we were going to get there, you know, and right. along the way, honestly, Jeff, people just kept telling us, you're never going to get this done. I cannot tell you how many legislators said, nice try. Your heart is in the right place, but don't. You're going to be disappointed. You're never going to get this done. Right. So then what was great was once we did, which was amazing, all those people called back and said, we were wrong. You guys are amazing. You did it. This is incredible. So that felt good.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I bet that felt good. And of course, you had an aligned governor, and that helped too, right? You had a governor who was
100% because one of the reasons why the charter bill, like nobody really put their political capital into it during the legislative session in the years before, was because they knew they didn't even have a governor who would sign that bill.
Sure.
So it's sort of like, how far are we going to take this? You know?
Yes, and we just had your governor on this show not too long ago talking about some of the great things he's done. And one of the things we talked about a little bit was education and his commitment to the kids of Montana. Now, the teachers union and others were against the charter school bill. What were some of the ways that they worked against getting the bill passed, and what were their agreements against the bill?
So, you know, one of the things they did, which was interesting, I don't know how we did this. Well, we tried to look bigger than we actually were. In a way, we also tried to stay pretty small. So I don't think they even took us seriously. I really think we took them off guard. Like, they were kind of like, oh, someone's carrying that charter bill, whatever. Like, they're never going to get that done. And so in the past, they had really sent in a lot of people. I mean, they have at least 15 full paid lobbyists with boots on the ground in the Capitol during the session every single day. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we had like five of us who are not paid. We're like volunteers. Right. And we're not there every day because we have lives. We have things that we have to do. So that was one thing, is they had their lobbyists out there. But when it came time for our hearings, they didn't bring out the big guns like they had in the past. And what was interesting was that in the House committee meeting hearing, which was our first one, we were told ahead of time, you're only going to get a half an hour or so. Don't bring all these people into here. The committee doesn't have time. And, you know, we were already being told this. So we were good. We played by the rules. We brought in a few key national partners because people here don't know about charter schools. And in the previous committee hearing meetings, there had been a lot of questions, and there were literally people who could not answer the questions. Now, I could answer all the questions at that point, but we thought it would be better for them to hear it from, you know, people who have actually engaged in charter schooling throughout the country over the last 30 years. So we limited the number of proponents we had. We played by the rules. We finished within, you know, the 30 minutes as requested. And then the opponents had their full-time paid lobbyists there, basically, you know, just saying all the myths they have about charter schools. They're not going to help children with special education. They're going to cherry pick their students. They're, you know, you're going to have to pay to go to these schools. I mean, it's just absurd claims about charter schools. So we did that. And then during the Senate hearing, which was like in another month, when we got to that stage, this time, so then they complained, the opponents complained, oh, they brought in all these out-of-staters during, you know, the education committee hearing. So we're like, that's because they're experts. You know what I mean? So anyway, so we're like, fine, we'll bring in those 500 people that we have collected. So we did as much as we could. And they were like, we're only going to give you 30 minutes. You know, sorry, just don't have too many people there. I was like, okay, we'll keep it to like 15 people. But of course, we blasted emails out for weeks telling everybody, and we really got organized. We actually scripted what we were going to say because we were going to do all the myth busting preemptively for this Senate hearing. So anything that they would bring up after we had our say, we would have already addressed. Anyway, we ended up having 46 people show up for this Senate hearing, which was unheard of. Everyone was shocked that the union boss was literally in the lobby at the State House making phone calls saying, you need to get down here right now. We need more people. Because we had so many. So that was pretty awesome. And at that point, we kind of knew we were going to get through. We're like, we're going to get this done. Like, the people of Montana really want this. And it was kind of incredible. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah. No, you did. You did. And as you were talking about this, it made me think, I mean, this, it probably at times felt like a David versus Goliath moment, right? Going up against the teachers union, and you had to just use your slingshot and take your best shot. But it sounds like they may have underestimated David a little bit too. Maybe Goliath had underestimated David. Any thoughts on that comparison?
Oh, yes. And from the beginning that we were, you know, leaning on that and reminding ourselves of that. And actually, it's kind of interesting because during this time, it was like right around this time last year when we were going through the legislative session and passing this bill. And so coming upon, you know, Easter and Passover, and I just found myself like really relying on the Passover story to get myself through this. When you asked, how did you keep your will to keep moving forward going? And I just kept sort of repeating myself that, you know, over and over, that rebellion to tyrants is service to God. And we're doing this for the right reasons. And we just have to remember that this is for all the students of Montana. They're who matter. And it's for them. Yeah. And keeping that in mind just gave us, you know, the motivation to just keep smiling and keep showing up and to never give up. And actually, during the Senate, when it was on the Senate floor, when the bill was on the Senate floor, our bill died in the process. It was like, you know, everyone was supposed to vote the way they were supposed to vote. Something happened. Oh, I know. We had this crazy thing going on in the state house that was a distractor, and everything just kind of fell to pieces one day. And it was a Wednesday, and I wasn't even in Helena because we weren't supposed to be up until Thursday, and we had a plan to like prepare for the Senate floor session and all this stuff on Thursday morning to make sure that the sponsor would be prepared. Anyway, and then all of a sudden I get a call and they're like, your bill is on the Senate floor. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I log in online and I just watched it die. It was like, oh my gosh, how did that happen? And so again, we just didn't give up. We just started making phone calls. And it turns out there's a way to bring about a bill back to life if you follow the rules. Yep. And in fact, the legislators changed their mind. They're like, okay, that wasn't supposed to happen. All these people just didn't do all of this for nothing. And so somebody got up, proposed that they bring it back, which they did on Friday, or they proposed that on Thursday. So they said, okay, we're going to do that on Thursday, and then we're going to vote again on Friday. So they brought it back on Thursday, and then on Friday, the bill passed. So again, going back to that Passover story, like this is a story we've seen before. It was kind of amazing.
Well, yeah. And to use another biblical reference, you went from David versus Goliath to Lazarus, right? You
raised
a bill from the dead, even, it sounds like. So, well, I mean, it must have been an incredible feeling once you got this bill passed, right? Talk about that.
It was an incredible feeling. And you know, we all assumed that that would be the hardest part. Like, if we can do that, we're going to get through this. But then, as you can imagine, a nice, you know, 3 weeks later, the governor signs it. And then another 3 weeks, bam, there's a lawsuit. So that's what we're dealing with now. So now we're stuck in the courts while this get, you know, and again, of course, it was the opponents. It's the Montana Quality Educators Coalition, which is basically the unions and all the school administrators and, you know, a whole group of them that are suing the charter bill and saying that it's unconstitutional. So again, I just keep telling myself in 45 other states in D.C., they've had these exact same arguments. They've all been to court and they've all prevailed.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, we've made such great progress on this over the last, certainly 4 or 5 years since COVID. But even before that, I mean, this has just been it's taken a long time. It's taken far too long for so many people to, to get us to where we are today.
Right.
Now, part of your efforts, there was another bill that was also passed through this. Talk about that other bill.
So there's the education savings account for students with special needs, which is fantastic. And again, you know, this is Montana. There are not a lot of people here. But partly because of that is one of the reasons that I, again, as a special educator, am very concerned about the special education services that we offer through the public schools. They're very scarce. They're not always provided by people who are even qualified to do so. I have literally done an observation in a small rural school here in Montana where a group of, you know, there are like 2 or 3 autistic teenagers who were literally just like placed in a room and babysat by a paraprofessional, and they called that special education. Right. I was like, this is not okay. And I get it. They're trying to do the best they can, but they can't. They can't meet the needs. And I'm not sure exactly why. So anyway, I think that this bill is really important because it gives parents a way out. A lot of parents already have become so frustrated that they've just pulled their schools, you know, their children out of schools and they're homeschooling them. So if you find that you're in a position where you can do that, then using this ESA would allow you to at least take a certain amount of what would be your student's tuition in the public school. And you can use that for education service providers or tutoring or curriculum or, you know, a whole list of things. So, again, it's only for students with special education needs, but it's a start. And, it's pretty amazing. And sadly, they just dropped a lawsuit on that about 6 weeks ago. They were kind of slow on that one for some reason. We just don't know. Again, there's no reason to think that a huge number of parents are going to pull their kids from the public schools to use that ESA because it requires a lot on the parent side to activate that. So it's a shame because there hasn't been a stop injunction on it yet where it's still like kind of fresh in the court. So that hasn't been worked out yet, but it's supposed to go in effect on July 1st. And parents are allowed to start registering on May 1st. So if there's not a stop injunction, we might get a really good idea about how many parents are actually interested in using that here in Montana. Yeah. And my guess is it's a small number.
I have to say it's kind of despicable, really, to file a lawsuit to stop, you know, parents of children with disabilities from having other options for schools. We've got to call that out for what it is. Absolutely. I mean, if you put that up to a poll, most Americans would say that's a despicable thing to do. And it's done not by rank and file teachers. That's done by union bosses who are more interested in controlling the process.
I know. And especially when you figure that, of course, everyone wants to send their child to the nearest, closest public school that's free. And you want it just to be right for your kids. And if you're in a position where it's not, you know, that's already sad. It's like, oh, this isn't working for us, you know, and then you have to go out of your way to do all this other stuff to make it happen. It's a big burden on parents and unfortunate. Yeah. So hopefully, we'll see what happens with that one too, but we have to wait it.
Yeah. Out. Yeah. No question. And we ought to get to the point where everybody has an ESA in a state. It's not just reserved for certain kids or whatever. Every kid ought to have an education savings account. Every parent ought to have that option. That's when we're really going to break the mold and help these kids. But let me ask you this. After the charter school bill passed, your group started kind of educating community leaders on how to start charter schools. How's that effort going? And are there any close to opening a charter school?
That's a great question. So that's what we did is we sort of our group of three, we divided and conquered. So I was asked by the governor to serve as the chair of the Community Choice Schools Commission for the state. So even though we're tied up in the courts right now, the judge said, you know, I'm not going to put a full stop injunction on this law. Instead, let's let that commission get up and running and so that they can start implementing the law to see, you know, can fill in some of the gaps about what everyone is so worried about or confused about. Not everyone, I should say, the plaintiffs, what they're worried about. So there's the implementation of the law that I've been very focused on doing. We have a great 7-member commission. We've been meeting monthly. We've been educating not only the people on the commission about charter ecosystems and the roles of all the different nonprofit organizations that help charter schools get up and running, but since all of our meetings are open to the public, we've been essentially educating the state, which is fantastic. And we know people are going back and watching our meetings online because they're sending in questions and making suggestions of different people we can have come speak to the commission. So that's been great. And then some of my other partners are now off trying to start schools. So we have about a dozen choice school groups that are starting to go through the process of creating a board, you know, writing bylaws, filing articles of incorporation with the Secretary of State. They're going through all the steps of starting schools. And that takes a long time. That takes, you know, about anywhere from like two to five years, depending on how organized the group is. And part of that is they're going to have to be raising money as well, because philanthropy is going to have to play a huge part in our choice system here in Montana, because like most charter laws, the funding is insufficient alone. But again, hopefully those starting boards will start reaching out to national partners also and look to see how other states have made it happen. So I would say if all goes well, and this law prevails in the courts, we'll probably hear about that in early 2025. And I would say of those dozen boards that I've heard about that are starting to get up and running, probably two or three of them would be ready to apply for a charter in the spring of 2025, and then possibly opening up as soon as the fall of 26. You know, just because it takes, you have to raise the money, get the facility, right, do all of that. But some of these smaller ones that are looking at opening up micro school versions, they certainly could go through their application process in the spring of 25 and possibly open doors in the spring of, I mean, in the fall of 25. So we're seeing the beginnings grow, which is wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. What an amazing story. And, you know, I love telling these kinds of stories because they're your story. This is your story of just saying, you know what, we're going to make a difference. And, you know, just average, ordinary folks who didn't, you know, have a background in, you know, getting a bill through a legislature or anything like that, stepping up and getting it done. And so I'm really thrilled to have you come on and be able to tell your story.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. And, you know, I mentioned in the beginning that I have been listening to your podcast and some of the people that you've had on. Yeah. They're so inspiring. And it makes you think, like you just said, you know, we were just three people and we had no idea and we just did not give up and we didn't know we could do this either. And I just hope that other people hear this and decide that they too can stand up and just get involved, because our governments are designed in a way that regular people can enter the system and have a voice. You just have to be willing to take those first steps.
Yeah, we're so blessed by that. We live in a country where you literally can. Three people can come together and they can make a difference. You prove that in the state of Montana. And you're right. It's an honor for me to be able to help be a part of telling these stories. But they're your stories, and they're just amazing stories. So again, Trish, thanks for joining us. And thanks for all you're doing for Montana and for education across America.
Thank you, Jeff. Take care.
All right. You bet. See, now this is what a great story. These are the kinds of stories that I love telling here on the show. They are the stories of average, ordinary Americans who say, you know what? This just isn't right. I'm going to pick up the cause. And they go out and they build a movement. And, you know, Trish talked about starting with three people, then going to five, and then it got back to three. And then it's kind of like all of a sudden you have 500 people. That didn't happen overnight. It took work. It took blood, sweat, and tears, but they got it done. And by doing so, they took on a Goliath in the teachers union in Montana, and they won. And who'd they win? What was the victory for? The victory was for the children of Montana. What a great story. Look, go out there and do the same thing that Trish did. Find a cause of liberty and a cause of freedom. Go out there and find that. Do the exact same things. This is for her. She told this story so that you could replicate this story. So go out and defend liberty and freedom. Don't take them for granted. Go out there, defend liberty, defend freedom. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.